Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 134 for March 2nd, 2008. Coming up in a few minutes.
There are no rights and wrongs in whiskey. If you want to like Coca-Cola, fine. You know, if you want to drink it out of a pint glass, fine. But obviously, the idea is to guide people to find the better way for them without telling them how it should be done.
That's Dominic Rossgrove, former Whiskey Magazine editor and author of a new book on whiskey. I mentioned From Confused to Connoisseur in the last episode and found out later that it's actually being released this weekend in Europe. We'll hear more from Dominic about the new book later, but first, let's look at the headlines. Whiskey Magazine announced its Icons of Whiskey Awards this past Thursday night on the eve of Whiskey Live London. Inverhouse was named Distiller of the Year for its work on relaunching the Balblair single malt with vintage bottlings, replacing the aged expressions that had been on the market. John Ramsey, the Edrington Group's master blender, was given the Lifetime Achievement Award for his 41 years in the whiskey business. And Ronnie Cox of the Glenrothes was named Whiskey Ambassador of the Year. Glenmorangie was named Innovator of the Year for its complete revamping of its entire line of malts last year, and a complete revamp of the Maker's Mark Visitors Center earned it the award for Visitor Attraction of the Year. Turning to the retailers, Linnell's in Brooklyn, New York was named the Single Store Retailer of the Year. If you'd like to find out more about Linnell's, check the archives for my interview with Linnell Smothers in episode 41 from May of 2006. Among the chains, the Whiskey Shop was named Retailer of the Year, Boisdale in London was named Restaurant of the Year, and there were three bars picked as the top whiskey bars of the year, The Grill in Aberdeen, Scotland, Desha's Bar and Restaurant in Lexington, Kentucky, and Bombay High in Mumbai, India all took top honors. When Terminal 5 at London's Heathrow Airport finally opens sometime this spring, the World Duty Free Shop is going to be a hot spot. Another distillery has announced an exclusive bottling destined only for Terminal 5. It's one you may never have heard of. Kininvie has never been bottled as a single malt. It sits near Glenfiddich and the Balvenie. William Grant & Sons opened the distillery back in 1990. Just 500 bottles of Kininvie will be made available for the World Duty Free Shop in Terminal 5. Don't look for Kininvie on the label, though. Grant's Ian Miller says it'll be labeled as Hazelwood Reserve after the house where William Grant's granddaughter still lives today. Janet Roberts will be 107 years old in August. She was on hand when the first spirit was distilled at Kininvie, and as you might expect, this one's going to be expensive, about $700 a bottle, and Ian says there are no plans to bottle any other Kininvie single malts in the future. Also on the high-priced list, Diageo is releasing a 32-year-old edition of the Singleton of Glenord. Diageo's Nick Morgan unveiled the new expression this week at an event in Taiwan. Just under 1,300 bottles will be available worldwide at an estimated price of around $500 each. It's always good news when a mothballed distillery reopens. Chivas Brothers plans to reopen Breval this summer. The distillery was mothballed in 2002 and will produce spirit destined for blending. Chivas is also working on plans to expand production at the Glenlivet to help meet worldwide whiskey demand. But with the good news, we also get some sad news. Jimmy Bedford, the master distiller at Jack Daniel's, will retire at the end of March after 40 years at the distillery. He's only the sixth man to hold the title of master distiller at Jack Daniel's, and Brown-Forman says his successor will be named soon. Check the WhiskeyCast archives for my interview with Jimmy from last November in episode 119. In the last episode, I mentioned the first-ever Kosher Whiskey Festival in New York City this past week. I stopped by for a few minutes to talk with Ari White and his wife Gemma, who picked the whiskeys and the menu for the event. It was a fundraiser for the Tikva Children's Home in Odessa, Ukraine.
A lot of their larger supporters here in New York, they know to be whiskey fans and fanatics even. And so they thought that this would be a very unique and fun sort of event to put together.
Now, let me get to the hard question here. What makes a whiskey kosher, or to qualify as kosher? Because if you look at it the hard way, it's basically barley, yeast, and water, but something else happens in the process, right?
So it's probably easier, instead of saying what makes a whiskey kosher, to answer as what makes a whiskey not kosher.
Okay.
With that said, that the main culprit are the sherry casks. Now, the old adage, you know, if you have two Jews, you'll have three opinions. So there are a lot of people that drink everything. There are some that don't drink any of them. But basically, any whiskeys which are aged or even finished in barrels that contained non-kosher wines, many hold to be not kosher.
And what's the problem with the sherry, for instance?
Oh, that's a tough question, which I'd almost have to run up here and try and find one of the rabbis if they're not already too inebriated to answer. But going back thousands of years, there are very strict rules and regulations for Jews regarding wines specifically. And so they're just problematic in general. And I know that, you know, they talk about 90% of the barrels out there, you know, are usually American oak. They're using an awful lot of bourbon barrels these days. So while it's a minority of the whole that's out there, at least in my small history of tasting whiskeys, they're some of the nicest. So part of what we were trying to do this evening is to pull 18 whiskeys, exceptional and distinct whiskeys, from around the world. I mean, we have Japanese, we have a couple whiskeys here from the States, George T. Stagg being one of my favorites, and then we worked very hard to find exceptional whiskeys from Scotland that did not use or do not use any of these other questionable casks.
Give me an idea of what you found for the festival.
So to go down a list of some of my favorites, the Highland Park 1977 Bicentenary, their vintage, unbelievable. I mean, if we could just go straight to the top, I'd say that the Strathisla 1960 from the guys at Binney's, really just world class and as good a scotch as I've ever had. Fantastic Dallas Dew 1975, which actually we're opening our pairing meal with. Of course, we had to bring in a Port Ellen, as any Isla fan like myself, you know, would have a duty to. And, you know, brought others from some old Glenfarclas, some Coela. Glenmorangie is one of the few out there that, aside from their specialty finish bottles, use almost exclusively American oak. So they had quite a lot for us. A 1977, which is nice and smooth. A nice ladies' whiskey. And yeah, you know, Springbank, Old Forester, we tried to range the gamut.
What did you find that you wound up having to set aside?
So my heart was first broken by Binney's 1971 hand-selected, which though none of the information I found online showed it being sherry, when speaking to the very knowledgeable staff there, they recalled when they actually hand-picked the cask itself.
And we're talking about a Highland Park now.
No, we're actually, so the 71 Highland Park. So that was pulled out of the bunch. We had to pull the Abelauer Abunad, which I thought is just a great cask strength, mm-hmm. which is actually entirely sherry or other Oloroso, I believe. So we had to work quite a bit, but thank God there's still a world of whiskeys out there to choose from.
Now, you're a young guy. How did you get involved in all this?
It's funny you ask. So, you remember the first thing my mother-in-law saying when I married a wonderful British woman sitting right here next to me, was that I had bastardized the English language. So while she probably stands by that, whiskey fanatics from that side of the world would probably say the same with my whiskey taste. I drank beer and bourbon and an occasional tequila. And that was all I really knew. And thank God my wife, who was brought up, you know, some of the greater things in the world. So she's, over these last 6 years, has turned me on to some of the finer things in life.
I'm sorry, what was that?
And tried to educate you a little bit.
How did you get started in all this? Since you were drinking whiskey long before you met him, right?
Yeah, I think my grandfather used to rub my gums with whiskey when I was teething. And it all sort of started from there.
Which we've started to do with our 5-month-old.
No, we have not.
Now, as far as I know, there's only one whiskey that's been certified by rabbis as kosher. The Speyside received that designation in 2005. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Whiskey Schiff is March 7th and 8th in Luzern, Switzerland. The U.S. chapter of the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society starts off its spring series of whiskey dinners on the 14th in Seattle, and the Scottish chapter will have a member's choice tasting on the 13th in Aberdeen. Whiskey Live Belgium is March 14th through the 16th in Verviers, along with the Smakoff Whiskey Festival in Malmo, Sweden. And Whiskey Live Brabant will be on March 15th in the Dutch town of Eindhoven. Of course, March 17th is St. Patrick's Day. Milroy's of Soho in London will host a tasting of Irish whiskies that night, and the Astor Center in New York City will do the same thing under the tutelage of F. Paul Pacholz. March 28th and 29th is the Whiskies of the World Expo in San Francisco. Whiskey Live New York is April 2nd, and Malt Advocates Whiskey Fest Chicago is on the 4th. Believe it or not, those are just some of the whiskey events around the world this month. You'll find more on the calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask. Become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla at Laphroaig.com. In the last episode, I mentioned Dominic Rosgrove's new book, From Confused to Connoisseur, and said it would be available in May. That's just the North American release date. It's actually making its debut this weekend at Whiskey Live London, and will be in European bookstores this week. Dominic is the former editor of Whiskey Magazine, and I talked with him this past week. Before we talk about the new book, what have you been up to since leaving the magazine?
Well, I've set up my own business called True Spirit. I'm still doing a lot of writing. I do some work now for North Advocate as well as Whiskey Magazine, and I'm writing for various other publications, doing a lot of tasting events in the UK, and whiskey seems to be going through a very healthy period at the moment, so I'm still doing virtually everything I can to make a living out of whiskey.
And that includes the new book, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's published in Europe this weekend, and America to follow soon after that.
Tell me more about the book. Who did you aim this at?
Okay, it's HarperCollins, and they came to me just when I launched my company, saying that they wanted somebody to write a down-to-earth book as an introductory book, really. It's subtitled From Confused to Connoisseur. And the idea of it is really, it's in their Need to Know series. So basically, if you come across whiskey and you don't know very much about it, the idea is that over my book, you'll be given leads to take your interest further. So it's an introductory level book, and it's got lots and lots of follow-up points. So you know, if you're reading a chapter on tasting, then there's a little guide in there to where you can find out more information. There's a lot of plugs for other books and for other outlets. So hopefully it's going to take whiskey to the high street and introduce a whole new generation. They've never done a Need to Know book on whiskey before, so they're very excited about it, but it also reflects the interest in whiskey in general.
What niche does this fill that some of the other beginner books may not quite fill?
I think it's that's a good question, really. I mean, I think that firstly it's about a style. It's done in a very conversational, jargon-free style. And secondly, the approach of it is that it's not in any way formulaic. The whole way it's written is that there are no rights and wrongs in whiskey. If you want to like Coca-Cola, fine. You know, if you want to drink it out of a pint glass, fine. But obviously, the idea is to guide people to find the better way for them without telling them how it should be done. And it's at every level, it's very approachable. And also, I've done a sort of, for each distillery, I've done a signature bottling, a bottle that if you go to that distillery, you should buy, and one that you might like to buy if you've got a little bit of extra money. So it's all designed to provide the very early rungs without losing the reader or getting too technical.
Give me a couple of examples of some of the whiskies you picked.
Oh, golly. Well, there is a chapter where I picked my top 50, and they're 50 whiskies that I've picked from the release from the last two or three years. So, obviously, it's very subjective, but ones that come to mind are anything from a Palliser 18, which I just think is a fantastic whiskey, and if you're going to go for a value for money whiskey but spend just a little bit more than the basic price, Talisker 18. But there's entry level Ben Wyatt whiskies in there. It's stuff that's readily available. Smattering favourites, which my favourites are there's three Lafroigs in there, I think, a couple of Ardbegs. So it's a mixed bag, but the idea is that you can find your entry point and you can start with a bottle, at the very bottom end and go as high as you like, really.
So what's next after this?
Good question. I've got a couple of exciting projects on the go which I'm waiting to hear of. I've got another book proposal before HarperCollins, but they want to get this one up and running before we go there, so that's something to look forward to. I've got a couple of projects ongoing with other companies. I'm doing some work with Beam and with Beam Global and with Woodford Reserve, the Bacardi Grand Foreman over here, promoting bourbon, and that's an exciting area here. In the UK, bourbon is still widely unappreciated. It's not really known, and we're just getting to the stage where people are starting to work with brands like Woodford Reserve and Maker's Mark and Beam Black. So I'm hoping to get more involved with that in the coming months. And plenty more writing, I hope.
From Confused to Connoisseur is available for pre-orders through the WhiskeyCast store powered by Amazon.com. Just click the store link at the WhiskeyCast website. That's also where you'll find links for this and every episode, the calendar of events, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. And my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. I'd love to hear from you. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.